Welcome back to Distance Education at Lewisburg College from the studios of Nissan Communication in Raleigh, North Carolina, on yet another snow day. My dear students, I hope you're enjoying these online lectures. Just to remind you that you can indeed watch them 24/7 anytime you want. Watch it once, twice, three times, no charge. Okay, great way to study for the exam, which you will undoubtedly have coming up soon. Well, today we're going to begin a two-chapter series. We're only going to do one of them, chapter 11, dealing with a topic that I honestly consider to be one of the most important topics in this entire class, biodiversity, a critical, critical issue in environmental biology. I mentioned to you in earlier lectures that I have been to the tropics many times. And of course, the Amazon, which is the largest area of biodiversity in the world. There are more plants, animals, bugs, everything in that region than any other place combined. It is estimated at 80% of all the life on planet Earth. Okay, millions of species are located in the Amazon basin. Unfortunately, as we will learn several lectures from now, that Amazon basin is being destroyed at, you ready for this, 1.2 acres per second, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Basically, the progenitor of life on our planet is going away, and that's why I consider this to be such a critical, critical topic. So critical, indeed, that we use two entire lectures to talk about it. But today, we're doing Chapter 11, which is what I'll call the introduction chapter to biodiversity. So, again, as we are always dealing with a topic, we have to begin with definitions. Definitions, okay? Genetic diversity is where we begin, okay? All of us love our doggies. And our doggies are called Canis domesticus. Okay, Canis is the genus. Okay, by the way, I mean, it should be familiar to you. Canis lupus is our friend, the wolf, lupus. Okay, Canis domesticus is the domesticated dog. Okay, it's kind of fun to think about, but I hope you know that any species of dog can have a baby with any other species of dog. Yes, a Chihuahua and a Great Dane could have a baby. It is unlikely, it is difficult, and you can use your imagination. Gotta have a little fun, right? But technically, they are of the same genus and species. They are simply varieties. They're varieties of Canis domesticus. So we call that genetic diversity. Obviously, a Great Dane and a Beagle and a Chihuahua don't look the same, okay? Therefore, they're genetically different, yet in this case, they are all of the same genus and species because they can interbreed. The second term is species diversity, okay? There are dogs, there are cats, and there are pine trees, okay? And no, dogs don't have babies with cats or pine trees, and pine trees don't have babies with dogs or cats, okay? Therefore, we define, in the broad sense, the fact that here are a set of different species. And species is probably the way we define most life on our planet. That's a pine tree, that's a maple tree, that's an aardvark, okay? That is a way of looking at it. Now, let's go back a second and talk about people, okay? Well, again, there are brown people, yellow people, white people, tall people, short people, people with all different kinds of features, yet what do you already know? Every human being on the planet has the ability to conceive with every other human being on the planet, okay? Homo sapiens sapiens, the wise, wise man. We are all one species. Okay, next definition. Ecological diversity. So we started off with the genetic diversity within a population. We then went to species diversity, that there are all kinds of species, but all those species live in a community, and we call that community the ecosystem. Therefore, each ecosystem you can define genetic, species, and ultimately the ecological diversity, the richness and complexity of the organisms in an ecosystem. Let's define that, okay? Richness means how many species, okay? This ecosystem has 50 species, 100 species. The Amazon, perhaps 2, 3, 5,000 species in a given area, a hectare, an acre, okay? That's called richness, species richness, lots of them. Complexity, remember our chapter on trophic levels? What does trophic levels mean, guys? Who's eating who? The function of every organism on this planet is to be eaten. Sorry, but it's true, okay? Therefore, the idea that you have all of these levels of organisms on different trophic levels from the apex predator all the way down to a bacterium, that means you have a complex ecosystem. A complex ecosystem. Okay, very important. All of this is called taxonomy. Taxonomy. Remember the great taxonomist Linnaeus back in 1650 started identifying everything. He was the guy who came up with binomial nomenclature. What's binomial nomenclature? Bi, two, nomial, names, binomial, genus and species. Got it? Okay, not rocket science. Binomial nomenclature, Linnaeus. Linnaeus is a friend of mine. He's a lumper. We call him a lumper, okay? What Linnaeus did, since microscopes were barely even invented, molecular biology certainly was a thing that couldn't even be dreamt of, what Linnaeus would do is look at the organism. Those of you who study botany know that we look at flowers. We love looking at flowers, okay? It's got how many stamens, how many pistils, how many sepals, okay? And from that, we could tell the shapes of the leaves. Is it a tree? Is it a shrub? That way we can identify those things. That's a lumper. Big characteristics. Big characteristics. Today, we have a whole group, and I'm not talking about a few people, of taxonomists that we call splitters. Splitters, euphemistically, pull down the genes of every organism. They look at it from a genetic point of view. Okay? And in other words, if you were truly a splitter, you might define human beings in 6 different species, okay? Because even though the complementary of our genes is 99.9%, there's 0.1%, okay? African Americans are different from Asians, are different from white people, okay? There's, ah, there you go. They're different species because there's a consistency. Those are known as splitters. They complicate our lives greatly. Next slide. Okay. So, after the lumpers and the splitters, okay, comes a very, very important question. If you go to just about every biology book in the world, and I complain about this ruthlessly, they are so far behind the curve, it is amazing. They say there's about 1.5 million species of organisms on this planet, from bacteria to elephant. Got it? Everything in between. Bacteria, elephant, viruses, aardvark, everything. Okay? How wrong they are. What they mean to say is we have named, remember, binomial nomenclature, genus and species, we have named 1.5 million organisms. And that's a lot. Think about counting from 0 to 1 million, okay? It's a lot of organisms. They aren't even close. How do we know they aren't even close? I was involved back 20 years ago in a project in Costa Rica called INBIO, I-N-B-I-O, okay? And it stood for Instituto de Nacional de Biodiversidad at Costa Rica. Okay? I think I got it right. Okay? INBIO. This was an unbelievable project that was funded by Merck Pharmaceutical Company to identify every organism in Costa Rica. You want me to say that again? Every organism in Costa Rica. Okay? Why did they want to know every organism in Costa Rica? That's easy. They were trying to find drugs. Many of our drugs. We'll have a whole lecture on pharmacology. Okay? But many of our drugs come from the rainforest. Okay? And they said, we want these samples sent back to New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey, where we're going to screen them for cancer, for bacteria, for all different things. Well, for reasons that we're not going to talk about now, the project lasted for a few years and, in fact, went belly up. The reason why it went belly up was a sad thing or a good thing. There was a convention in 1997 that made an international treaty. And the treaty makes perfect sense. You cannot patent nature. If God made it, you cannot discover it and patent it. Simple. Okay? You can't do it. Okay? All of a sudden, the drug company said, well, wait. We're here to patent medicines and make billions of dollars. Now we're not allowed to patent it. Goodbye. But they had 5 years of data collected from around Costa Rica at that time. And if you saw the lab that this is done in, it would just blow your mind. Okay, it's a lab the size of a large building with shelves, shelf after shelf after shelf after shelf, and the shelves are usually about that thin, and you pull them out like map cases, okay, 10 feet wide, you pull it out. And when you pull it out, you look, and there are thousands of dead insects with pins in them, with little bars. What are they called? You know, when you scan at the food store, the ID bars that scan your food out, okay? Okay? The little barcodes, exactly. Thank you, professor, okay? The barcodes, okay? With little barcodes on them. Well, guess what? We say there's 1.5 million species on the planet. In 5 years in Costa Rica, which is the size of West Virginia, almost to the same square mile, they discovered over 40 million species of beetles, coleopteras alone. Okay? Alone. What we don't know is profound. Many people like E.O. Wilson from Harvard estimate that we have discovered less than 1% of all the species on the planet. So, as I say in my slide, we're talking about minimally 100 million species in which we, as I said, have hardly discovered any of them. Next slide. All right. What we like to look at, and you could look at figure 11.5 in your book, and of course, as we already said, you are on chapter 11, okay, are what are known as biodiversity hot spots. A couple of years ago, I was in Ecuador, the Ecuadorian cloud forest, okay, which is known as a biodiversity hotspot. The reason why they're hotspots is they're not only rare and unusual, but they are very, very, very unique. Orchids, bromeliads, aroids, birds, insects that are only found endemically, new word, endemically. An endemic species means it is only found there and nowhere else in the world. So the world identifies these biodiversity hotspots. Why? Because A, they should be conserved. B, they should be studied. Okay. C, perhaps the cure for cancer and for AIDS and everything else lies in those populations. Very, very important that we actually keep an eye on them and make sure that we protect them in perpetuity. All right. Who cares? What is the issue? Okay. I say to most people, you really need to care. You really need to care about biodiversity. Going, what? Okay. They don't really understand it. Well, let's take a look at what biodiversity is, okay? I don't believe you eat rocks. I don't believe that you drink seawater in order to nourish your body. You eat food. All of our food is organic. All of our food came from life, plant and animal or microbial, okay? Therefore, all of our food is part of biodiversity. Let's use an example. In the Indonesian archipelago alone, okay, in the country of Indonesia, on their islands, there's about 5,000 islands. There are over 1,100 species of edible fruits and vegetables. Let me say that again. One country, 1,100 species of edible fruits and vegetables. If you go out to the countryside there to what their little farm stand, you'll find them. They pick them in the forest. All kinds of fruits from there, and they are delicious. Absolutely delicious. And who knows about them? The people who live right there, and that's it. Okay? What happens if you cut the rainforest down in order to plant palm trees for oil or to take the trees out for lumber and let the soil erode away? You've lost this biodiversity forever. In this case, over 1,000 species of food for human consumption. Not funny. 29%. You don't know this. You should. 29% of the entire U.S. pharmacopoeia, USP, that's the list of licensed drugs in the United States, almost a third of them come from extracts from plants and animals, mostly from the Amazon. Hundreds of different things. Reserpine, scopolamine, okay? All of these things were discovered. Okay, curare. Okay, you say curare, that's the blow the guns. It comes from a frog. I've seen all five of the dendrobatid frogs, okay? Many of them are the size of your baby fingernail. Tiny, tiny little frogs. They've got all different colors. The Indians, thousands of years ago, learned to catch them, squish them, grind them up, and dip their arrows in it. And when the arrow hit you, it might just penetrate the skin. Like, what's the big deal? Okay? In about a minute and a half, you're down and you stop breathing. So, well, what does that have to do with anything? God forbid you ever need heart surgery. They put you on a bypass, and what do? They stop your heart in order to do the surgery on it. How do they stop your heart? Tubocurarine, an extract of the dendrobatid frog of the Amazon, some of which are endangered to be extinct. Drugs that are used to save our lives, okay? All of shamanic medicines. You go down there, you go to a shaman, virtually hundreds of plants. He's up there pulling plants down, taking organisms, making a tea out of it. My back hurts. I have a headache. Whatever. He'll go and he'll give you this. Okay. You give him a chicken in return. Okay. There's no money. It means nothing down there. And indeed, they work. They work. They're not going to the local CVS. They're going to the shaman who uses the plants and animals from the rainforest. Okay. They cure diseases. Figure number 11.7. in your book, gives a list of over 50 different drugs that come from the rainforest. Moving on, biodiversity, okay? Ecological services. You got clean water. Do you know where clean water comes from? The forest. How many of you knew that? When it rains down on the forest, the roots, the soil, the organisms purify the water. Purify the water. Okay, air and water are purified by organisms. Soil decomposition. If you didn't have soil microbes, nothing would decompose. You'd be hundreds of feet deep in dead animals and plants. This is an ecological service. The entire food web, back to our trophic levels, who's eating who, is dependent on biodiversity. Okay? Finally, something that I love to talk about that some people go, wow, this guy's weird. Okay? I love climbing mountains. I've done so all my life. Hope I continue to. I'm not a young man anymore. You get up on top of a Colorado peak, 14,400 feet up. It's a beautiful day. You can see for 200 miles, and you look out on God's creation. And you see the waves of trees and the lakes and the aspen and the beautiful things. That's life. That's known as existence value, aesthetic value. Life is beautiful. Simple as that. Life has beauty. And when you destroy life, what you are doing is destroying God's creation. You could call that a sin. I do. But this is one of those mamsy-pamsy things where, indeed, the aesthetic values of biodiversity itself is critical for where we're at. All right, moving on. The greatest biodiversity specialist in the history of the world is alive today. I saw him last year at a meeting. His name is Edwin O. Wilson from Harvard University. As of right now, he is 98 years old. He is 6'8" tall and is as sharp as he was the day he got his PhD from Harvard in, I believe, 1933. Okay? Brilliant genius. You want to read a book? Just look up the name E.O. Wilson. He's written 50 of them, and many of them are absolutely brilliant. About the year 1995, he wrote a book on biodiversity, and he coined a term. And we use that term today because it's absolutely correct. HIPPO. Let's move on. What is HIPPO? Threats to biodiversity. H, habitat destruction. I, invasive species. P, overpopulation. P, pollution. And O, over-harvesting. Big deal, okay? Habitat destruction, let's go back to that list again to look at them. Habitat destruction is by far number one, okay? Wilson, you ready for this? And again, I'm not going to argue with this man, okay? The man has studied, he has a research station in Costa Rica that he's gone to for the past 60 years, every single summer. He studies biodiversity. Basically, due to habitat destruction, Wilson will tell you that an average of 50 species per day, say it again, 50 species per day go extinct on the planet Earth due to habitat destruction. Logging, destruction of wetlands, okay? Invasive species, alien species. We carry things all over the place. We bring things in. Everybody knows. You live in Central North Carolina, everybody knows an invasive species. It's called kudzu. Kudzu comes from Japan. It was used as a stream bank holder, and it escaped. And it's everywhere. You go out into a field today, a unkept field, probably two-thirds of the species that you're going to see are invasive. They were brought in from other countries to the United States. Okay, first P, overpopulation, that's obvious. The reason for so much of this destruction, particularly, well, not particularly all of these things, habitat destruction, over-harvesting, pollution, are us, people. Okay? There's too many people. People have to have a place to live. They have to have a place to grow food. They have to have a way to make a living. And hence, what they do is they go into nature. And by going into nature, they are unfortunately destroying. They don't know from what they do. Okay? It's not intentional most of the time. But as a result, 50 species a day are going extinct across our planet. And it continues without abatement. So, pollution, obvious. We will spend a third of our course in environmental biology talking about pollution. Air, water, soil, pesticides, agriculture, the whole thing that's going on. Well, guess what? Not only are we affected, but life is affected by it. Remember we talked about DDT And the raptors, the beautiful birds, we wiped them out. Basically, we extincticated them in the United States. We had to go elsewhere and bring them back in after we banned DDT in order for them to repopulate our country. Wonderful success story, okay? But think about what led to it in the first place. We pollute our environment. The last one is probably the saddest of all. We already addressed that in part when we talked about aquaculture and the oceans. The fact is that we human beings have become so dominant on our planet today that we have literally overrun our planet with harvesting of whatever we want. Now, sometimes you could say, well, look, we need fish. We're over-harvesting fish. What we do is we over-harvest wildlife. You can't find wildlife in the Amazon. You can't find wildlife in the Virunga, Congo rainforest. Why? They were all killed by people. Okay? A bird is food. A jaguar is food. A peccary is food. A tapir is food. They will kill it to eat it. And it's over-harvesting. But the saddest of all is something where I get really motivated and sick about, okay? And that is the use of particularly animals for our convenience, okay? And I'm not saying what I'm about to say to be funny, because there's nothing funny about it, okay? Let's talk about the major apex predators, the big cats. Lions, tigers, leopards, cheetahs, okay? Some of the most magnificent animals on earth, okay? And we all can agree to that. They are the top predators in their environments. All of those are almost extinct. Almost extinct. There are right now, okay, in the year 1900, it was estimated that India, Nepal, and what we now call Bangladesh had a population of about 600,000 Bengal tigers. Right now, there are 90 left in the world. 90. Okay? They have been hunted to extinction. Well, back in the 50s, when it was so stylish to have a fur coat, that's not the issue anymore. Ready for this? Let's look at our friend the tiger. The tiger has teeth. The tiger has, the male ones, have a penis bone. They will shoot and kill the tigers to remove the teeth and the penis bone. The black rhino, as of 2 weeks ago, is extinct. The last one died on the planet. What do you do with a black rhino? You eat the black rhino? Anybody want to eat a rhino? No. The poachers kill it to saw off its horn. Gone. In the mountains of North Carolina, every year, they find huge dead bears, 400, 500, 600-pound black bears. Okay, somebody took it to mount it to make a rug? No. The bear is shot. It's lying on its side, and right on its right side, there's a 3-inch hole cut with a knife. They went in and they removed the gallbladder of the bear. They hang them up in their barns and dry them out. What am I talking about? Teeth, penis bones, horns, gallbladders. They are all bought as Asian aphrodisiacs. A gallbladder will sell for $5,000 a kilogram. Tiger teeth, tiger bones, rhinoceros horses will sell for upwards of $10,000 a pound. Because, allegedly, I am a rich man in South Korea and China, in Malaysia and Indonesia. I have some of this ground into my soup or onto my sushi. And I eat it, and I will be up all night doing what vigorous men do. By the way, women don't count in this. There's no such thing as a woman aphrodisiac from this. This is what men have, okay? You say, this is insane. This is frigging ridiculous. Okay, this isn't some 14th century feudal world. Okay? Here's the story. There's more demand for those things right now as I talk to you than there has ever been. The world has programs to intercept this, to prevent it from happening. 10 years ago, one of the most famous conservationists in the world, the son of Louis Leakey, the famous paleoanthropologist that discovered all the ancient men in the Olduvai Valley, okay, of Ethiopia, his son Richard was the chief caretaker of the reserve, the Kruger Wildlife Reserve in South Africa, one of the largest wildlife reserves in the world. All those things are there. Giraffes and elephants, obviously. They shoot them to take the tusks to make carvings out of. The tusks are not used as aphrodisiacs. That's used for art, okay? They kill all these things. He got in unbelievable trouble. The world court tried to put him in jail because he became so fed up that he gave instructions to his rangers. What were the instructions? You see a poacher, shoot to kill on sight. Made international news, okay? And, of course, they said, well, the poacher, the ranger was given instructions by Leakey. He defended himself, and he won. He won. Now, again, I mean, here, a human life was taken to save some guy from shooting a rhino. Is that fair? A rhino's an animal. A human being is a human being. I'm not going to answer that question for you, okay? Reality is this type of over-harvesting is threatening to kill everything that we are doing. So, historically, there are some interesting stories to be told, okay? How many people have heard of the passenger pigeon? How many people have heard of the Carolina parakeet? Okay? Do you realize before 1933, there was a parrot this big? Orange, red, and green. Look it up online. The Carolina parakeet. We had a parrot growing in North Carolina, in the eastern part of the state. Turns out, they taste good. The last one was shot to extinction in 1933. 1928. Take a look at pictures. Look up on Google, passenger pigeon. They will show you a picture of a sport that took place every summer weekend in Charleston, South Carolina. You go to church in your finery, okay? Go and pray. Afterwards, the women would be preparing lunch. You would go out to the field next to the church. If it was the right time of day, the sky would turn black with over 100 million passenger pigeons. Okay, anybody know what a dove looks like today? Well, very similar. A little bigger neck, a little longer beak, passenger pigeon. Okay, looks just like a mourning dove you see out in the yard. Okay, here was the game. They would fill a shotgun with birdshot. They would blindfold the shooter. Okay, they were allowed to get instructions from their partner, but they would put the gun up in the air. At the right time, the partner would say, shoot, and he'd pull the trigger, and the birds that were hit would fall from the sky. They would bet. It was a betting game, like cockfighting, who could bring down the most number of pigeons. By 1928, the passenger pigeon was hunted to extinction. How many of you have heard of the animal that should be the symbol of the United States? The bald eagle, by the way, is not a raptor. It's a scavenger. It loves to eat dead animals. You know who knew that? Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin said there's two other animals that represent the United States, and he lost the battle. One of them was kind of funny. What country? There's only one country in the world, not even including Canada, that has this animal, okay? Anybody want to guess? The turkey. Turkeys are native to the United States of America, the eastern part of the United States of America. He said, that should be our bird. Everybody looked at it and said, that's stupid. He said, all right, I got a better one. It's found here and it's found in Canada. And everybody knows it and it's majestic. And it's the symbol of the Department of the Interior, the bison, the buffalo, okay, with its horns, okay, a powerful animal. Well, we had a fellow named Buffalo Bill Cody. Buffalo Bill, after his rodeo days of shooting with an Annie Got Your Gun, decided he would start a business. He would bring rich businessmen from New York City up the train to Albany, Albany to Buffalo. And in Buffalo, other trains would come in from Chicago and Pittsburgh, and they would all meet in Buffalo. This is in the 1880s. And this was back when Buffalo was quite a city. Buffalo was called the Queen City, okay? The population was five times higher than it is today, because after all, who would live in Buffalo with the snow? I went to school there. I'm allowed to say that, okay? They would meet in Buffalo, and you know how you see the circus train, the Ringling Brothers train lined up? He had a locomotive, and they put 20 cars on it, and it was high class. Cost thousands of dollars to go on the Buffalo Bill hunt. And they would start heading west, and they'd drink champagne, smoke cigars, have wonderful food. Finally, they would get into the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming, on the Northwest Pacific Railroad, and somebody would be a lookout, and they'd say, "Get your guns!" They would open up the windows on the train, and it would slow down. It wouldn't even stop. It would slow down, and they would get out their 30-30 Winchester repeating rifles, the gun that won the West, the most famous rifle, okay? That's where you go like that. It's got a lever, okay, and it could shoot 10 shots. That was a big deal. Now, you got automatic weapons. Back then, the Winchester 30-30 was the most famous rifle. They would all line up in the windows as the train would run by. Bang! 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 By the time the train passed through, there'd be 300, 400, 500 dead bison lying next to the track to rot. Didn't use anything. To rot. Okay? You ready for this? By the year, thank God for Teddy Roosevelt, by the year he established the first really important national park system, okay, after Grant established Yellowstone, but TR went further to have huge areas of national parks and national wildlife reserves established, there were 50 bison left in the world, hunted to the brink of extinction. Not by the Indians, who would shoot one buffalo with an arrow, pray over its soul for a day, take every sinew, every hair, every piece of meat to feed their tribe. Unmitigated slaughter for the fun of killing brought the bison, which probably, as I said, should be the symbol of the United States, that close to being extinct. Move on. Bushmeat, poaching, aphrodisiac, pets. Real good one on pets. You go down to the southern Amazon. They have a beautiful bird called the hyacinth macaw, the largest piscicid in the world. Okay, I've seen them in the wild, standing from the top of their head to the bottom of their tail, 8 feet. 8 feet. Okay, the beak is bigger than your fist. Okay, when they fly, I mean, it's like dinosaurs flying through the air. Very hard to breed. For some reason, our friends in Germany are in love with this bird. Rich Germans love to have as a pet. They live over 100 years old. Over 100 years. I think the oldest one right now is about 123, okay, in captivity. How much? Standard price, I looked it up a few weeks ago. $100,000 per bird. Okay? What do the people do down on the Amazon? They put up nets. They trap them. You know how they ship them? They stuff them in PVC pipes. Plug one end with cotton. Plug the other end with cotton. Put them on ships crossing the Atlantic Ocean, hoping that they're not discovered. Pop out at the other end. Mortality rate's about 70%. So 7 out of every 10 birds that are shipped will die, but 100,000 a pop. That's probably about 20 years worth of wages for a campesino in the southern Amazon. Okay? Money, greed, it's going to make it happen. All right. U.S. Endangered Species Act, okay, 1976, very controversial. It exists today. People east of the Mississippi love it because we don't own land. People west of the Mississippi hate it because a farmer, a rancher might own 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 acres. The Endangered Species Act is considered to be one of the most controversial acts in the United States and probably one of the most useful. What it says is that the Fish and Wildlife Service, I have a number of students who work for them, do surveys, wildlife surveys of different animals every year. If they find out there's a problem, next slide, they have the federal law behind them to classify those organisms as vulnerable, threatened, or endangered. The definition of vulnerable simply means that the populations are stable, but they are very endemic. Remember what endemic meant? It only is found in a small area. Small area. It's the only place it's found. Okay? For example, up on Grandfather Mountain, we have the spruce fir tarantula. That should scare you, right? Tarantula is that big hairy thing. The spruce fir tarantula is smaller than your baby fingernail. Okay? About half a centimeter in size. It was discovered up there only 20 years ago. The populations are good, but it's the only place it's found. Vulnerable. Threatened means large populations that we knew were there have been declining. This is where our friend the wolf was for so many years. Okay, it was declining because ranchers shot them. They were killing their cattle, their sheep, okay, and they were shot almost to the point of extinction, but now they are protected and they're coming back in places. Endangered, of course, the highest category of them all. Endangered simply meaning that it is on the verge of extinction. If you possess on your property vulnerable, threatened, or extinction, they have the right to prevent you from using your property. We have one very important bird in North Carolina, the red caucaded woodpecker. It's found in the sandhills where everybody shoots golf. Who has the largest red caucaded woodpecker population in the world? Fort Bragg. Filled with the birds. During the wrong time of year, they are not allowed to have open exercises where they are shooting, where they're firing shells. Because if they kill, you know what you shoot a bald eagle, which is no longer on the endangered species list, but 5 years ago before it was taken off, if you shot a bald eagle, 10 years imprisonment, $1 million fine for shooting a bird. Okay? This is serious stuff. They mean business. Okay? So if you are a lover of biodiversity, a lover of wildlife, you say, hallelujah, thank God we have this protection. If you're a landowner, you might not be very thrilled about it because you can't use the land that these species are on. All right. So, basically, as we said, okay, it's basically the West, the Endangered Species Act is looked at and not. All right, so basically, what is the future of what we're talking about here? We're talking about ecological planning. And ecological planning means that we have to prepare ways to preserve biodiversity. Now, let's give ourselves a pat on the back. The United States has the most sophisticated and honored wildlife and plant protection program in the world, bar none. As I said before, you can thank Teddy Roosevelt for starting it back in 1915, okay? The fact simply is that we have more acres of national park, more acres of national forest, more acres of national wildlife refuges than any other country in the world, and we enforce it, okay? One of the jokes is Brazil was trying to show how nouveau it was, and they took out a map of the Amazon, and they put a gigantic square around an area, get this, 10 times the size of Yellowstone National Park, which was the largest national park in the world, okay? Look at us, okay? We found out, you know what their national park was? A square on a map. Did they have rangers? No. Did they enforce poaching laws? No. Did they do anything? So again, walk the walk, talk the talk, two different things. Thank God the United States is on top of it. Okay, good. International treaties are an important part of what we do. Good. Okay. CITES is the most important one, the Convention on the International Trade of Endangered Species. Virtually every country in the world, including the United States, has signed the CITES Treaty. And what that means is, number one, you're going to protect endangered species. Number two, you are going to inspect for it. What does that mean? And whenever I'm coming back from the Amazon, they will look through my bags. They want to know if I am smuggling endangered species back, and they have the right to do so, because no matter how much I want that thing that I'm bringing back, okay, it's illegal, and I could be in big trouble if I knowledgeably am exporting an endangered species. CITES. Good, not good enough. Good. Okay, so let's conclude here with this first half of the discussion of biodiversity. Again, a topic that we're going to delve into in more detail. What have we covered? The fact that biodiversity is something that is special, that it is classified based on the organisms that have evolved on our planet, that there are probably 100 million plus of them, that they are becoming extinct at a rate, at greater rate than any time in the past 65 million years. E.O. Wilson calls it the sixth great extinction. Remember the last one? That's when the dinosaurs went, due to the asteroid that hit the Yucatan Peninsula. Okay? Today, we are causing it. No asteroid, no meteor shower, the sun didn't blow up. We, through HIPPO, are destroying the very fabric of life on the planet. You need to be aware of it, an essential part of environmental biology, and it is something that I hope you become as motivated as I have become throughout my career in understanding the importance of this subject. That ends this lecture on distance education, Lewisburg College, brought to you live by Nissan Communication in Raleigh, North Carolina. Thank you, Amnon, our producer, for this great job. I hope you appreciate it. And very importantly, for those of you out there listening to this, I want feedback. I want to know, has this been helpful to you? Because I just spent a day working on it, and Amnon spent his time working on it. And if it is useful, we certainly want to know that. If it is not, we certainly want to know that too. Have a great day and pray for spring. Thank you much.